from KQED.
From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Dave Iverson. Actor John Leguizamo is a master of the one-man show, but there are one-man shows where a whole lot of life is on display. His immigrant childhood, his fractured relationship with his father, girlfriends, wives, and his shows are also about his own life as a performer who managed to get arrested during his very first performance. Leguizamo is frenetic and funny, and he's credited with opening up what Latino actors can do both on stage and in film. His current show, Ghetto Clown, opens a two-night stand in San Francisco tonight, and he joins us next on Forum, after this. From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Dave Iverson. John Leguizamo's first performance was on the subway in New York.
And I see that conductor's booth, and I'm about, booth, that's how I used to talk. Length, north, south, we were so good I couldn't afford a TH. And I kicked that booth in, and I grabbed the mic, and I was like, what's up, people? How y'all doing? ¿Qué pasa? Next stop's gonna be Jackson Heights. Quien mi gente.
Which was followed by a series of one-liners and then an arrest. His career has mostly gone in an upward trajectory ever since. John Leguizamo has appeared in the motion pictures Moulin Rouge, Die Hard 2, Romeo and Juliet, among others. But it's his one-man stage shows that have energized audiences and won awards, including both Drama Desk and Obie Awards and 2 Tony nominations. His latest one-man show is called Ghetto Clown, and it continues his series of intense, passionate, and highly personal stories that he first brought to the stage and the subway more than 20 years ago. After a successful Broadway run, Leguizamo and Ghetto Clown have been on tour, and now he's landed here in San Francisco for a two-night stand at the Orpheum Theater at 8 o'clock. And John Leguizamo joins us now. Good morning.
Good morning. How are you,
my friend? I'm fine. I'm hoping you didn't take the subway over to the studio this morning.
No, we drove in a nice little town car. I the subway was such an amazing thing because growing up, we were like across the street from the subway, the elevated, and we would miss out on all the thrillers and action movies. Because as soon as they were going to reveal who the killer was, the train would go, and the murderer was. But I learned how to read lips, so that was really helpful.
You had the subway sort of a continuing character in some ways in some of your stories, because it would also interrupt your father whenever he would want to tell you something particularly yeah, important.
Yeah. That was great, too. It had its saving graces, yeah. Whenever he was yelling at us, I'm going to beat the living. And that's what I'm telling you.
What about your childhood, as well as the subway, is key to so much of what you do on stage. Describe what that was like growing up in Queens, immigrant family, and what it was about that childhood experience that wanted you to bust down the conductor's door and take out a microphone and start performing.
Well, the subway was our gateway out of Queens. You know, it took us to Manhattan. You know, and that was it. Manhattan was live. It was what everything was happening. The best clubs, the hottest girls, you know, the comedy clubs, everything was happening in Manhattan. In Queens, you know, we just, you know, getting by. So being on that subway was everything. And we would go everywhere. The whole city, the whole Bronx, Brooklyn, Rockaways was open to us on the subway. You know, you just jump in there and we would hang out. Sometimes that would be our whole day, just riding the subway. And so it became part of our lives. And growing up in Queens was interesting because especially Jackson Heights, it was like the biggest melting pot in the world at one time. You know, you had all the peoples of all the world represented in our neighborhood. So I grew up hearing, you know, the Jamaican family next door talking to us, Bati Fu will come and tell me something, you're doing what? You had the nice Jewish family across the street, they're caveling, it was nice to see you. Well, look at that ponum. Like it's a mitzvah seeing you today, you know, and yeah, just everybody, the tough Irish guys would be there too, yeah, wanting to beat the living crap out of you. And we had everybody, Italians. And so I grew up hearing voices and having to make them laugh so they wouldn't beat the living crap out of me. So that's how I developed my comedy stylings.
And so was it hearing all those voices, is that part of what made you want to take that in and perform? Is that, where did that come from exactly? Was it just literally to not get beaten up, or what was it that made you, as you called it, the class clown early on?
Well, there were several factors, you know. Part of it was a really difficult home life, and sometimes the best moments we had at home was when my father was drinking and I was making him laugh, and so there was peace at that moment when I was, when I could make him laugh, and all of a sudden all the tension and horribleness of the house would just stop, because my dad was like a military, he was like a sergeant at home, like the great Santini but worse, on steroids. So, you know, comedy was the thing that just elevated my whole life, you know, just the thing that was the saving grace. So when I was on the streets making my boys laugh, you know, I would do voices for them, and I was always we always moved neighborhoods, so I was always having to try to make peace with everybody and have people like me, because I was in a different neighborhood and there was different difficult situations to arise to. So I would just do my voices, you know, because I could do voices. I would be like, I'm bringing it home, my baby. Man, see, you never take me in copper, man, see? Look, I've been somebody telling me the bum which I am. And, you know, my friends would laugh, you know, like my friends Ray Ray and Xerox and them, you know, they'd be like, yo, John, you kill it. Yo, do that voice again. Yo, I love when you do that. That stuff is funny, dog.
And you had a high school teacher who believed in that voice, too.
Well, yeah, I mean, I have a firm belief, and that's part of Ghetto Clown, is that you can't make it if you come from a situation like I do unless you got a mentor or mentors. Sometimes it's not enough. One mentor is not enough. And you need that one person in your life to tap you on the shoulder and say, you can make it. You're worthwhile. You got something. And you need somebody to tell you that in your life, especially from the situations, you know, that I came from. And I had several, and I'm very thankful, and I pay tribute to them. You know, I mock them too, because that was my style. Like Mr. Zufis, who I used to call Doofus, but he was my math teacher, and he, you know, he was like, Mr. Lesquizamo, you have the attention span of a sperm. If you could only rechannel your annoying attention, pain in the ass ways. Look, if they can make penicillin out of moldy bread, they can make something out of you, Mr. Lesquizamo. And he, you know, he said, why don't you be funny, man? You got this comedy. Instead of causing such havoc in the classroom and always, you know, upstaging me, why don't you just make something of yourself? And he pushed me, and I went and I found an acting teacher because of him, you know.
John Leguizamo joining us this morning. His show, Ghetto Clown, has been on tour, had a successful run in Broadway. Now it's here in San Francisco. He's at the Orpheum both tonight and tomorrow night. Let's listen to an excerpt where you talk about writing. This is from you're referencing one of your earlier works, and the clip will conclude with how your dad reacts to it. But let's listen to that, and we'll come back and talk more.
And I started to write, and I wrote, and I wrote, and I wrote till I crossed that wall of fear that you may never live up to your expectations of yourself. And I wrote, and I wrote, and I wrote till I gave myself permission to say all those things that I really felt inside but I was afraid of saying. And I wrote, and I wrote because it was my way out. It was my survival. And I wrote till I had these characters and all these monologues, and I called it Mambo Mouth. And I got a Drama Desk nomination, and I invited my now divorced parents to the ceremony. And of course, I don't win. I'm just a runner-up. And my father's, congratulations, mijo. Congratulations. Of all the losers, you came in first place.
An excerpt from John Leguizamo's play, Ghetto Clown. I love that clip. Let's talk about both parts of it, the writing and writing and writing and writing. Are you writing all the time? It sounds like it. In the documentary I watched about this performance, it's like you're writing even while you're still in performance. You're writing and you're writing and you're writing.
Yeah, I'm always writing. You know, writing came to me, interestingly, in high school. I went to a school, Murray Bertram, which was very competitive in comedy clowns, class clowns. You know, everybody, there was a lunch table where you couldn't be, if you hadn't been really funny that week, you wouldn't be able to sit at that table. And so you had to earn it, you know, and you had to have crack somebody, you know, or put somebody down or whatever. So I had to start writing my jokes so I could make it to that table. So I would start writing feverishly at home on, you know, and keeping files And, you know, and I practiced a joke, and the next day I come in, and I got to sit at that table lots of times, but not till my junior year. So it took me like a couple of years to get there, and I was so proud of that. And that's when I started writing, and now I do. I write all the time, and, you know, I keep journals of things that happen that are interesting. I never know what they're going to be for, but I just write jokes and stuff.
Do you rewrite your play? I mean, like, would you go back to your hotel after this and say, I got a new idea. I'm going to write that in, and would that wind up in the show tonight?
Yeah, I mean, the show, thank God, is always evolving. I mean, I think it evolves for the better constantly. And, yeah, it keeps evolving. It evolved to this production from the Broadway is a much different show. And I think it's a way better show, much tighter. Some bits are funnier and much more poignant. I'm freer in it. Because, you know, it takes a while to get as free as you can, you know, and give yourself permission. You know, I talk about a lot of – I mean, this show is extremely funny, but there's a lot of raw elements and a lot of, you know, a lot of pain in the show. I like my comedy to hurt, you know. Not just me, but I want it to hurt you too, because why should I be the only one hurting on stage? So I talk about a lot of personal stuff, you know. I talk about, obviously, my difficult relationship with my father and betrayal from, you know, you make it and you have all these friends and you think that you're friends – and then you start to realize how fame and success tests people's character. And some of my friends, you know, end up using me just to get somewhere. And that was a very sad discovery for me. So that's in the show. And then doing Sexaholics for some weird reason. I don't know what happened, man. I guess it happens to a lot of comics or a lot of – especially ethnic minority comics like Dave Chattel and Cat Williams and myself and Chris Tucker. I don't know. It just happens to us. We start putting so much pressure on ourselves to be perfect and right and funnier than everybody, and we get mad competitive with ourselves. And I had a nervous breakdown, and I didn't want to perform anymore. I didn't want to do live stages. I didn't want to write anymore. And it took me 10 years to get back on stage. Oh. And Ghetto Clown was my coming back. And it took me a while. I mean, I had to trick myself. I did college talks about my career, you know, just talking. And I had to get really drunk and lubricated to talk to these kids. And I went there with my resume and I would talk about it. And the kids loved this. I was like, hey, I might be able to do this again. I might be able to do it. And I did a lot of them until I finally, you know, I was able to get back on stage.
So it seems like what is at the heart of your shows, what makes them so intensely personal, is also what makes them dangerous for you.
Absolutely. Yeah. I like the danger of it. I mean, unfortunately, sometimes the danger is too dangerous. Like my parents wanted to sue me, you know, after Freak, especially my dad went talk to a lawyer and whatnot. And then my mom wanted to, but, you know, she has a price tag. So I bought her a brownstone and she retracted. I love her.
Yeah. Is it worth it to go there? I mean, do you have to go there and risk that in terms of familial relations, friendship relations, all of that?
You know, I had to. I mean, even though my family was sort of one of the prices I had to pay for it, it was definitely worthwhile. I mean, I had to. There were certain things that happened in my childhood that were really painful and difficult. There was a, you know, and so I had to talk about it in Freak, you know. I had to talk about the violence at home, and I had to talk about it, you know, and the difficulty of that neighborhood. I got beat up so much everywhere at home and by gangs, the Savage Nomads, the Latin Tops, the Cobras. I mean, there were all so many gangs, and I wanted to be cool. I wanted to be a gangster, but I wasn't a gangster. I was a funny dude, you know. I was a ghetto nerd, and so, you know, I had a rough time in that neighborhood. But it made me who I am. So, you know, I think I pay tribute to that in Ghetto Clown, that I finally realized that all those difficult things shaped me and made me the warrior that I am, the verbal warrior that I can be, you know.
And you couldn't have gotten there without paying that price?
No, there's no way. Why would I? Why would anybody look at the world from that point of view? You have to go through a certain experience in life to appreciate it, understand it, and to embrace sort of that kind of edge and that dark side. Yeah, you have to go through that. Otherwise, what would you be talking about?
You've commented that part of what you want to do in this show is to show other young Latino performers that they can make it too. What do you hope they in particular get from you?
Well, you know, it's interesting because I started doing this show for a lot of different reasons, you know. And one of them was I would go to this high school at Rikers Island, the jail in New York City. You know, and it was a very incredibly inspiring thing, but depressing at the same time, because the majority of the kids were all Latin, and they were all these kids, and they were so smart, so bright. And you're like, oh, man, you're here only because of lack of opportunity, you know. You just wanted everything, and you know you couldn't have it, so you went, you know, the gangster route, and it's really sad. So I started doing my show there, and they were really inspired, and I read also that, you know, 45% of Latin kids and 50% of black kids drop out of high school, and that's a tragedy. And I was like, I understand why, though. I understand them. And so I did this show to show you, look, I come from the same place, and hopefully this will be a baton or some kind of magic wand that hopefully will inspire you like I was inspired. And maybe somebody will continue to write or will feel like they can write or perform or dance or rap or whatever.
Someone just posted, actually, on our website, John, as a young Latino boy growing up on the east side of San Jose, I can't help but idolize John Leguizamo. I aspired to be a writer and a performer, and seeing him do so well and reading his comedy and his autobiography, I have to say that he just brings out inspiration. He's a genius in his work, and
wow.
I feel connected.
That's hot. That's hot. That makes it all feel worthwhile. Genius is a big word.
You say in the play, I guess this was in an interview that I heard, that this story is also about the journey to become an artist, and that part of what you didn't like or don't like necessarily about L.A. and the film world is that you have to be tough and you have to be ambitious and you have to be thick-skinned, and that's really not what an artist is. And yet when I listen to you, it seems like they actually really go hand in hand. I mean, that you can't in some ways. You couldn't have gotten where you are as an artist if you weren't tough and thick-skinned and ambitious.
True, but you can't – yeah, but it's contradictory, because to be an artist, you have to be incredibly vulnerable and you have to be incredibly – willing to share this vulnerable side of yourself. And it's hard when you get a little too tough-skinned. You're not going to allow that vulnerability to show. You know, I know a lot of kids from these neighborhoods that are really tough, and there's a wall. There's a really big wall, you know, and a lot of actors have walls that they come up with to protect themselves, and their work is, you know, it's a little glib. It's a little, you know, on the surfacey. And to protect that vulnerability, you have to do a lot of work to protect that. You know, I still go to therapy. I love my therapist. He sounds just like my dad, except on Xanax, you know. and he helps me stay, you know, vulnerable and stay, you know, within myself, you know, to respect that and take care of it.
Do you think that sometimes people want you to not show that part of you and just be sort of funny and energetic and all of that? I read the New York Times review of Ghetto Clown, and in part it's critical in part when you're vulnerable, when you're sort of more confessional.
Yeah.
Do you think that that's – do you run a certain additional risk by allowing yourself to not be all funny, all wired and frenetic all the time?
No, I don't think so. I mean, I was never a stand-up. I was a performance artist, because I did the stand-up clubs, and I just didn't, you know, I did it with a girlfriend of the time. You know, we were like a comedy duo, like Nichols and May and Mira, Stiller and Mira, and it was all right. You know, it wasn't my thing. You know, Chris Rock was there and Adam Sandler, but I didn't like that set up joke. And I don't know. I wanted to tell stories, man. I wanted to tell real stories and performance art spaces where Eric Bogosian was performing, and I got to see Whoopi Goldberg and Lily Tomlin. I go, that's where the realm I want to be. Spalding Gray, you know. So I took a little bit from everybody and I created my own hybrid, which was a sort of a play with mime and all the characters and long vignettes and scenes about my life. And, you know, I took a little piece from everybody and I created my own thing. And with Freak, you know, I broke that paradigm. And now with Ghetto Clown, I took it to a different place. This is the career. And you'll see a lot of one-man shows about people's careers now, because it took me 8 years to crack that the one-man show career paradigm.
Are you glad to be back on stage? It sounds like it took a long time to sort of get back to that point.
Yeah, I'm really, really happy, man. I'm in a great place. It took me a long time to get here, but I really enjoyed the process of Ghetto Clown. I enjoyed performing it. I love the feedback I'm getting from all the youth and older folk, too. You know, a lot of people come up to me and go, you know, I was going to quit dancing. I was going to quit this writing. But now I feel like, you know, I didn't realize you had such ups and downs. You know, nobody talks about that nonsense. But that's what I wanted to be. I wanted to be inspirational to them and to myself. And I think I accomplished that with this.
How are audiences responding? And I'm sure you get this question a lot, but I'm curious about when I watched clips of it and when I watched Freak, it's very New York. I mean, right down to, you know, wearing a Mets cap or whatever. By the way, they lost to the Dodgers yesterday.
You know, I know, but they won the other night, too.
They lost in the ninth inning, John.
Thanks. But Knicks are up 3-0.
So it feels very New York, and so I'm curious, do West Coast audiences, what do they take from it? Or do you change it to sort of so that they, or is it universal enough that it doesn't matter sort of what zip code you're in?
You know, it's great you're talking about that, because when I first started out doing Mambo Mouth and Spikrama, I didn't tour because I didn't think anybody would get me anywhere but New Yorkers, you know, and I went to Chicago to prep up Freak. And then I came here to San Francisco. And wow. So I just went to big cities where I knew there were big Latin populations. And I had a great time, man. And people loved it and they dug it. I didn't change anything. I didn't want to.
You didn't put on a Giants cap?
Or pander. No, I didn't do any of that stuff. I had to be true to myself. And people got it. They loved it. And I had a great time. And then I got more confident than. And then with Sexaholics, I toured all over the West Coast, you know, Sacramento, Texas, New Mexico, Denver, and Miami. And dude, it was incredible. I was like, wow, I wish I had known earlier, believed earlier. I would have toured with all my shows. It would have been an incredible opportunity for me and everybody.
I always appreciate it when people call me dude. You know, it makes me feel so much, so much younger.
All right, dog, home slice, word up.
John Leguizamo, his Ghetto Clown is tonight at the Orpheum, also tomorrow night at the Orpheum, 8 o'clock here in San Francisco. We're going to take a short break, and when we come back, we'll take your calls and emails. If you're a young performer and you'd like to talk to John Leguizamo, if you're Latino and interested in how you can figure out how to get on stage and tell your story, we'd love to hear from you. You can join us at 866-733-6786.
Or if you're black or Asian or old, right. We want all of y'all.
That's right. It's fully affirmative action hour here.
I love
next
all
half
my
hour.
Peoples.
And you can email us at forum@kqed.org. You can post your thoughts on our Facebook page or also on our website as well. And as we go out, just talk us into what people will see a little bit when they show up at the Orpheum tonight.
Well, this track that's playing right now, Joe Cuba, Bang Bang, which was the beginning of Latin Boogaloo in New York City in the 60s, where you had all the great jazz musicians, all the Latin musicians, and they started to cross-pollinate, and it was a beautiful, creative, musical time. And so this opens up the show, and I use music to delineate, you know, the era. So this would be the 60s, and I go to 70s with Just Begun, which is the beginning of hip-hop. And, you know, and I keep going from time to different, you know, reggaeton to the 90s.
And we'll keep going after this. This is Forum on KQED. More with John Leguizamo in just a moment. I'm Dave Iverson. Welcome back to Forum. I'm Dave Iverson. John Leguizamo joins us for this rest of our hour. His show is at the Orpheum Theater in San Francisco tonight, Ghetto Clown. It's here tonight and tomorrow at 8 o'clock. We welcome your participation, calls, emails, forum, Facebook page, any way you want to get in touch is just fine. You can join us at 866-733-6786. Email us at forum@kqed.org or post your thoughts on our Facebook page or on our website. Let's hear first from Kim, who joins us from Novato. Oh, we aren't quite ready for Kim. Kim, we'll get to you in just a second. Sorry. Ilsa writes from Milpitas. Mr. Leguizamo, I admire your talent, especially the range of characters that you play. But I have a soft spot for Sid from the Ice Age movies. Can you talk a little bit about playing that character as well as characters like the drag queen in Tu Wong Fu?
Yeah, well, you know, I've always been a big fan of cartoon voice, especially Mel Blanc. He was just like a comedy god. And when I got this chance to create this character, I wanted to do it like Mel Blanc. Like, you really feel like that voice is unique to that drawing. So I spent a lot of time with them looking at the drawing and trying to come up with a voice. I even looked up Discovery Channel footage of sloths, and I found out that they stored food in their cheek pouches. So I walked around with a sandwich going, how am I going to come up with this voice? How am I going to come up with this voice? That's it. And then that's how I came up with the sloth.
And on Tu Wong Fu, the drag queen character that you played.
Yeah, Douglas Carter wrote this great screenplay, and it was incredible because Patrick Swayze, rest in peace, and Wesley and I, we did a lot of mad research together, and we went to all the drag queen clubs and balls in New York City, La Escuelita in Times Square, which was very famous at the time. And we took it seriously, man. We had each one had a drag queen coach of their ethnic background, and we would be in this big room with mirrors and just walk around, talk with them, and just hang out. And it was a wild time. We really wanted to do something different with those characters.
And you got a Golden Globe nomination.
So did Swayze. Yeah, both of us. Yeah.
And there's a funny story you tell about the fight that you got into with
Patrick. Yeah, I don't know what happened. I guess me and Patrick were so in character that we started PMSing at the same time. I don't know what happened, but
I don't know if I want this story to go further, but go ahead.
We got cranky one morning, and I was ad-libbing a lot, rewriting a lot, and as is my way. And he was just not in the mood. He was like, you know, John, would you just stick to the lines? I go, dude, you know what I'm here for. I got to be me. And he goes, would you shut the hell up? And I go, I'm not. You're going to have to make me. And we were both, I don't know, edgy. We started getting ready to fisticuff. And we're both, I'm in hot pants. He's, you know, and F me pumps. And Wesley's like, I'll hold your purses. And we were about to duke it out. And it was ridiculous.
And didn't you have an encounter with Al Pacino sort of similarly when he basically said, come on, you don't have to be on all the time?
Well, yeah. You know, I had done a lot of research on drug dealers, and I grew up with a lot of them. And
this was in the film
Carlito's Way. And I knew what I wanted to do with that character. And De Palma was, I don't know, he's the one that really showed me what film acting is about. And he would do 30 takes of me just trying different stuff and saying all these crazy things. And he loved it. And Pacino was getting very tired. And I don't blame him, you know, because I would just go off and off. And Brian was laughing. And I found myself this freedom on film because of Brian De Palma and this character. And Pacino was more like, you know, why don't you just say the lines, John, you're a clown. Just do less. But I was going, Mr. Pacino, if I do any less, I'm not even going to be acting. He goes, hooah, you know, just do less. And I was like, all right, I'll try. But, you know, Brian is like setting me free. And I found my way. And Brian and I, you know, became real close after that. I did Casualties of War with him. I did Carlito's Way. I was supposed to do Mission Impossible, but I couldn't get out of this other project.
Do you want to go back to do more film? Or now that you're back on stage, is that where you want to be for a while?
I started doing a lot more film. I don't want to stop doing stage. I want to do my own stuff and other people's. I want to do some classics. I definitely want to do a lot more theater. And, you know, I love film, especially independent film. That's one of my favorite genres because it's more character driven and less plot, you know.
Do you want to direct?
I do. It's not easy. I've done it before. I didn't like it, but I think I'm more suited now.
To do what?
To direct.
No, but to direct what?
Oh, to direct, you know, comedies, dramas. I like independent films. That's the genre I really dig.
Let's go to Kim in Novato. Kim, go ahead.
Well, you've sort of stolen my thunder already, but I want to say how much I appreciate your work, how much I enjoyed. I mean, I think Tu Wong Fu is a classic performance.
Thank you.
Loved it. Still love it. Still see it when I'm scrolling through to listen to something or watch something, and I hit that and I stay. I find that I almost sometimes got you confused a little bit with the Benicio del Toro performance in The Usual Suspects, which I think you would have slammed as well. So, I don't know. You guys have already sort of covered what I was going to say. I just want to say I'm sitting here laughing and smiling as I'm listening to you talk, and to thank you for coming to San Francisco with your show.
Oh, thank you for having me. Thank you for the kind words, too. Appreciate
Kim, thank you. The Benicio del Toro observation reminds me of something that you talk about sometimes, that when you've auditioned for certain things, or that there's this sort of Latino, you know, that you're competing with. Say more about that.
Well, yeah, you know, at the beginning of my career, you know, it would always be me, Benicio del Toro, Isai Morales, Benjamin Bratt, and, you know, and we'd be up for the same drug dealer part, you know, and we'd all come in, yo, what's up? How you doing, man? You something? And then if it was a janitor, we'd all come up dressing over coveralls and, you know, and be like, how you doing? And then for Romeo and Juliet, it was between me and Benicio del Toro for Tybalt. It was the two of us. And luckily, he's the king of mumbling greatness, because, you know, he was up there going, and Baz Luhrmann, the director's like, okay, Benicio, more articulation, more pronunciation. All right, John, let's see what you've got. And I was doing a lot more theater, so I was very, you know, very on and theatrical, and I won out that part, you know. But he's one of the greats, man. I love what he does. It's so interesting, unique, and different.
Would you like to do more Shakespeare? I mean, is that something that was a very different, obviously, adaptation of Romeo and Juliet. But can you see yourself doing more of that kind of
thing? I'd love to do Richard III. I love the Scottish play. I still can't even say that. You know, it's a curse to say the name of the Scottish play in theaters. You know, I did it once, and F. Murray Abraham told me to, you know, you have to leave. I get chills, man. You have to like run around the theater three times, turn you around your chest, spit, some crazy. You're not allowed to whistle either in theaters.
I'll tell you my one theater story. I was in a production of the Scottish play, playing the role of Macduff when I was in college, and opposite me was Sigourney Weaver. So now you know how old she really is. Robin from San Carlos writes in, saw you years ago in Chicago in the 90s. It was fantastic at the Briar Street Theater. So memorable. Thanks for that. I've enjoyed following your career. Best of luck here in San Francisco. I almost said Sacramento. Mimi tweets in, would you please ask John Leguizamo, where are the funny Latinas? Does he mentor comedians on their way up?
Oh, there's a lot of funny Latin women and funny Latin dudes out there. I tell everybody, just perform as often as you can. Just find any place, anywhere, and just do it as often and all the time. And don't let anything discourage you. Just keep doing it. Nobody starts out great. And it's only just, you know, give it 10,000 hours worth and you'll be a master of anything.
Have you ever thought about doing workshops for aspiring young actors or sort of having the John Leguizamo School of Acting or anything?
Yeah, I did that for a while. I used to do all these comedy workshops and everything. Yeah, I did that for a long time. I haven't been doing that because I got kids and I can only nurture one group at a time.
Well, how has that changed you, being a parent? Or has it?
Oh, it's changed me a lot. You know, I really feel... Before, I just felt like, you know, America and you know, ethnic kids were like my realm that I had to protect. Now I feel like it's the whole world and the kids of the whole world. It makes you just really, you know, you feel connected to every kid in the world somehow when you have a child. You just feel you have to take care of them and save the planet and just feel very responsible for things.
Are you tough on them?
On my kids? Yeah, I'm tough on them. I, you know, not in the way my parents were. I don't want to put that on them, but... I think you have to have a little adversity in life to make it. That's how the blues came out. That's how salsa came up. And that's how I came up and comedians mostly come up. You know, they don't have to be that successful. But
how do you create adversity when you're presumably doing pretty well and your kids are probably not exactly needy?
Yeah.
How do you create adversity?
Well, I just give them lots of things to do. They have a lot of chores. They have, you know... My son is doing cello. He's doing drums. He's got parkour classes, karate. He's on a lead. I just got him doing – he's got to read for me. He's got to do a lot of stuff. He's got to struggle.
Listener writes in, what are some dream roles that you did not get, and what is the role you'd most like to play?
Wow. That's a great question. I mean, there's a lot of things that I was ignorant or dumb or arrogant to turn down that became great hits that were my bad, like Fresh Prince of Bel-Air, I turned that down, and I turned down the role of Jeffrey Wright did in and Shaft, things that I would have rocked. Roles that I would love to have gotten. There's a lot of stuff out there. Like there's a lot of great lawyer parts that I want, doctor parts, you know, and a little more high end stuff. You know, definitely political stuff that I want to get into, and a great role of a lifetime. I know I haven't found that yet. I'm searching for that. I think it's going to be on cable TV because I think cable right now it's the golden age of cable TV, and the best writing, the best directing, the best acting, and the best storylines are all happening on cable TV, not movies or network anymore.
Let's hear from Rosa Maria in San Francisco. Rosa Maria, go ahead, please.
Buenos días. Oye, niño, si eres un genio.
Gracias, gracias, mami.
Habla tu tía Rosa Maria Picone. I want to ask you something.
Yeah, yeah.
How's the Buggin' Baby? Was totally off the roof. We want more House of Buggin'. The closing scene you gave us there is still very hot in my memory, where you were in the hospital, right? You're in the clinic. Or the
Oh, yeah.
Queremos mucho más de eso, niño.
Gracias, gracias, tía.
Y te vamos a ver esta noche, ¿ok?
Oh, un placer. Te veo esta noche.
Con besos.
Un besito.
Hasta luego.
Chao.
Speaking of cable TV.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, House of Buggin' was a fun... I mean, it was a first Latin variety show, and it was rough, man. It was a lot of work. Variety shows are no joke. There's a lot of writing, and it's massive production. But I just did a pilot for ABC. You know, based on my life, we'll see what happens. Test it really high, but that doesn't mean anything. You know, only like one pilot out of 100 makes it. So we'll see what happens. If not, I'm going to definitely go to cable and do something.
Comments coming in from lots of would-be performers. This person writes, hey, John, what's up? Love your comedy. I saw Mambo Mouth. It inspired me to go into comedy. It took me a long time to actually get up to go on stage. I've been trying to find the right personal topic for a one-man show. So how do you find the strength to tell those really personal stories? Where does that strength come from?
Yeah, it's interesting because I didn't start doing personal stuff. I started doing, you know... A lot of different things. I used to do like the Bible if it had happened, if Jesus were a Latin man, and Westerns if we had won the West and not lost it. So I used to do pieces like that, you know, and play all the characters. And then after Mambo Mouth, I did Everybody in My Neighborhood. Then I wanted to do things. Spikorama became sort of the transition. And it was kind of based on my family, but loosely based, much more fictional. And from there, that's where the leap happened, and Freak started to become personal. I don't know. I think you just have to write what turns you on. That's all. You got to write what turns you on, whether it's personal. I'd say fiction is much better because you can write about personal stuff, but no, you don't have to pay the price.
Do you feel like you can keep going to that personal well? Your father's the conflict between you and your dad, for example, has come up in all of your one man shows. Do you keep going there, or at a certain point, do you let that go?
I think the ghetto clown is my letting it go. You know, I touch upon, you know, dealing with him with the lawsuit, and then, you know, seeing him. He had some medical issues, and I went to see him, and I felt I got closure with him. You know, and that's my closure for him. You know, my next show is definitely not personal. It's going to be, you know. Very random, historical, you know, heady vignettes. No, not a play, not linear, you know, just all over the place.
Joshua is next in Sacramento. Joshua, go ahead. You're on the air.
Hi. I just wanted to highly, highly recommend the show. I saw Ghetto Clown on Broadway when I was living in New York, and Mr. Leguizamo is just such a truly magical performer. So, it was just funny and so touching because you do get into your personal stuff, and I just couldn't recommend it more. I just wanted to call in and tell San Francisco turnout by the
great Thank you, bro.
Show. And the funniest thing I remember, and I still tell people this, and I don't want to steal your joke, but I can't look at a New York subway map without thinking of you. So I'll let you decide if you want to tell the audience what that's about or make them pay ticket price, but I'll listen to the rest of the show off the air. Thanks so much for your show and for all your work.
Thank you for the kind words. That was great, man. Thank you for the plug. I love that. Well, you know, I always saw this. I don't know if anybody else saw it, but the New York transit map looks like male genitalia. I mean, it always had, and so in the show, I draw the male genitalia to compare it, so you can actually see it the way I see it.
Joshua, thanks for bringing that into the program. Sophia tweets, John Leguizamo, thank you for being an inspiration to our Latino family. We relate, and we are proud of what you do. Joanne writes, what is your position on immigration reform? So, you wanted to be political? Now's your chance.
Oh, come on. I mean, part of the recession problem was when they started keeping immigrants out. I mean, immigrants have been the life force of this country. I mean, immigrants are doing the jobs that nobody wants to do. They're coming here to do great things and keep our economy booming, because you need that workforce, that low-paid workforce that works, you know, relentlessly, and you can't stop that. You just hurt the economy, you hurt farmers, you hurt, you know, restaurants, you hurt a lot of businesses. It's ridiculous. I mean, Latin people have always been here. We helped discover this country. We named most of the states: Nevada, Arizona, California,
San Francisco,
Sacramento. Those are all Spanish words. Florida, you know, means the flowery zone, and you know, Colorado means the red state in Spanish. I mean, our names are here. We've been here. We're not, you know, and most people coming here are good people, man. They're honest, hardworking people with incredible working values, you know. stronger than Protestant working values, actually. Most Latin people have like 5 or 6 jobs and they pay their taxes, you know. They pay everything they buy that has a tax on it. So I don't know. I find it ridiculous that you try to keep Latin people out.
You made a really interesting decision, I guess it was last year, to take the show back to your land of your birth, to Colombia, and to do the show in Spanish. There's a documentary about the making of Ghetto Clown that aired on public television on PBS. It's fascinating, and that's a particularly fascinating part of it, at least it was to me. Why did you make that choice, and what did you get from it?
Well, you know, you get middle aged, and you got to do things for different reasons. You got to do them for passion, and I had a passion that I thought I could conquer, get my language back. You know, because it was my mother tongue, and English is actually my stepmother tongue. But you know, if you don't use it, you lose it. So, I first of all, I didn't think my humor is kind of very American. You know, even though I'm Latin, and there's a lot of Latin humor in my American humor. Because you know the physicality of it, and storytelling is such a Latin thing, but I tried, and I got some great people to help me with my grammar, my diction, and it took me a year to translate it, and I had a lot of help, and I went there, and it did great. You know, they didn't laugh the way Americans laugh. You know, they didn't give me as much. They did, you know, some things didn't translate. Some other things that they laughed at that people here don't really laugh. They gave me applause and. For things that, you know, here we just like go, it's kind of humorous. So it was very interesting, man. But it was a blast to do it. It was a big task that's checked off my bucket list.
I had the sense watching the documentary that it also gave you a sense of family, of being home, that for all the fraught nature of your relationship with your dad and the difficulties of your childhood, yeah. That going back in some ways gave you a kind of family love.
There's something great. I mean, going to Latin America, I love it. Going to Colombia, Puerto Rico, in Mexico, I love it, man. I just go there and I feel, I don't know, you feel at home. I feel very comfortable. Maybe it's the sound, the language that I grew up in. You know, my parents, this is not their first language either. So there's something, yeah, going home, you know, and doing my show in Spanish in Colombia was an incredible event. You know, I'd never performed for them ever. You know, I never did my show in Spanish. So for them, they'd never seen the one-man shows, my family down there. So when they saw it, they were like, wow, this is what you do. This is how you made it.
Do you feel sometimes people talk about, you know, athletes will say, I don't want to be a role model. I don't want to have extra responsibility. Where do you come down on that, on being a role model, on sort of being someone who carries a certain responsibility for other would-be Latino, aspiring Latino performers?
Well, you don't want to be a role model when you're creating or writing. You know, you don't want to have that you have to be free. You don't want to have that burden. But, you know, I guess being a parent, I don't know, I got to a certain place where I accept it more. You know, I feel like, why not? I mean, you know, the more responsibility you take on in life and the more you can do. I mean, I have had great success. Why not try to pass it on and nurture? And so, yeah, you know, I like being a role model now. You know, I like trying to help out and change the world. I feel like it's my responsibility and my duty to make it a different world and a better place for everybody.
John Leguizamo, our guest, his play Ghetto Clown tonight at the Orpheum Theater in San Francisco, tomorrow night as well at 8 o'clock. Still time to join us if you have a question for John. You can join us at 866-733-6786, 866-733-6786. Email us at forum@kqed.org or post your thoughts or questions on our Facebook page as well. If you had to identify the quality or ingredient that you've relied on the most to get you where you are now from where you grew up,
yeah,
what would that be?
Well, I had an incredible drive to express myself because, you know, I wasn't allowed to express myself at home. And I don't know, I just found some freedom on the streets and making people laugh. I had this drive to be free and to express myself. And the other thing was I just felt like Latin culture and the Latin friends I had and my Latin family, I just felt like we had so much to give and were so funny and creative and intellectual, and I just didn't see it anywhere. And I felt like that was something else that was really lacking, that it wasn't being documented, that it wasn't being put out there. And I was like, where are all these brilliant Latin people? I know they, I see them. Why aren't we on TV and movies and more plays and literature, you know? And it's starting to happen, you know? I see such great talent out there, you know, and it's heartwarming.
And you no longer probably have to follow your grandfather's advice, right, about walking in the shade.
I don't do that. That was back in the day, man. I definitely did that too, though. I definitely stayed out of the sun just to try to make it because, you know, he would tell me, only, mijo, I'm sorry, but only white Latinos make it to Telemundo. Stay out of the sun. Walk on the shady side of the street. Don't even eat dark food, papito.
Sam in Pleasant Hill has a question. Sam, go ahead.
Hi, John. Your work has touched so many people and moved many of us. What moved you the most? And I'll take your answer off the air. Thank you so much. You are incredible.
Oh, thank you. Thank you very much. Yeah, you know, that's what I feel like. I've had mentors, even though they didn't know they were my mentors, was Richard Pryor was one of them. You know, because he just... I don't know, he talked to me. I felt like he was talking directly to me, John, when he did his shows, you know. And so he was a huge, huge inspiration to me growing up and doing what I do. You know, he talked so rawly about himself and so personally and could do the voices and it was social and political at the same time. I don't know, he was... And then Eric Bogosian to me, too. You know, he brought the rock and roll and the sex and the danger to the one-man show. And then Lily Tomlin brought the play to it and Spalding Gray kept sort of the journal personal part of it. I mean, they were great people I followed in their footsteps to create my own version, you know, my own sort of hybrid of all that.
Juan in Cupertino, you're on with John Leguizamo.
Hi, John. I just wanted to thank you. I'm actually from Colombia, and growing up in Colombia in the 90s and 80s was really, really rough with what's going on. So... for us to see a Colombia make it, you know, in the movies, it was something that my mom always pointed out. So you have been an incredible role model, an incredible example of not only Latin culture, but Colombian culture and, you know, Colombian people make it elsewhere. So, you know, I cannot thank you enough for everything that you've done for both the image of our country and, you know, for Latin people and everything. So, you know, thank you. Thank you so much.
Yeah, you know, that's kind of what I wanted to do, you know, just really put out our Latin culture and Colombian and Puerto Rican culture out there and just I wrote the shows for me. That's kind of what I do. Every time I write a one-man show, I'm writing it for me. I want to be in the audience watching me. That's kind of what I do it for.
Juan, thanks for the call. Time for one more quick comment from Chris in Petaluma. Chris, go ahead.
Hi, Mr. Leguizamo. I just really wanted to thank you for talking about how difficult it is to be successful. I think in an era where we have Instagram and American Idol, that there's this expectation of instant success, and you're talking about how challenging it is and how difficult it is really inspiring, and I'll encourage you to do that more.
Thank you. Thank you. That's kind of like why I kind of masochistically wrote Ghetto Clown in a way, you know, it's things you don't really want anybody to know, you know, besides your therapist or your manager. But, you know, I felt like, you know, put it all out there. And, you know, it was great. At first I was embarrassed and, you know, people go, oh, I didn't know you had such hard times. I go, yeah, I did. We all do. But after a while, you know, it became undemonized for me. I could talk about all these painful things, all these failures and losses, and talk about my great successes too. You know, it's all part of the journey of being an artist, man. And that's what Ghetto Clown is about. It's a, you know, portrait of an artist as a middle-aged man, my James Joyce version.
So last question. You get a call, and one of your kids has been on the subway, and they've busted down the conductor door, and they've grabbed the microphone.
God.
What do you do?
Wow, man. You know, I don't wish me on any parent. You know, I was a difficult child, man. I was rough. I was rough on my parents, and I understand that now that I have kids. If my son is on the subway, oh Lord, I'm gonna have to take him to therapy. I'm gonna, you know, get a mediator. I'm gonna get him into programs. You know, that's what they did to me and saved me.
John Leguizamo, his show, Ghetto Clown, on tonight at the Orpheum, 8 o'clock tonight, 8 o'clock tomorrow. Great pleasure to have you
Thank
on our
you.
Program today.
What a pleasure. And this song right here, Just Begun, is the birth of hip-hop and rap right there.
Forum is produced by Judy Campbell and Irene Noguchi. Our engineer is Danny Bringer. Dan Zoll is our senior editor. Our engagement producer is Amanda Stupai, with online support from David Marks. Raul Ramirez, our executive producer. I'm Dave Iverson. This is Forum on KQED.
Funds for the production of Forum are provided by the members of KQED Public Radio and the Germanicos Foundation and the Generosity Foundation.